From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Last fall, a New York Times story headlined, "Many women at elite colleges set career path to motherhood," set off a new round of debate in the mommy wars, the battle over whether women are better off at work or home. This month, a very seasoned mother rejoined that fray. Terry Martin Hecker married at age 23 in the 1950s and rejoiced in home and motherhood. In 1977, as other women poured into the workplace, she wrote a Times op-ed piece titled, "The Satisfactions of Housewifery and Motherhood in an Age of Doing Your Own Thing." Decades later, at age 63, with five children and six grandchildren, her husband of 40 years handed her divorce papers on their anniversary and sailed off with his girlfriend to Cancun. Now, Terry Hecker is back with a new op-ed in the Times and with a very different take on marriage and staying home. This hour, On Point, women, work, and home, and the long-term consequences of choices made. You can join the conversation. Will young women opting out of work today regret that choice when the kids are gone? With divorce rates, what they are is a career now a woman's best friend. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Later in this hour, we'll hear from syndicated columnist Ellen Goodman. But right now, joining me from New York is Terry Martin Hecker. Her new essay, headlined Paradise Lost, appeared in the New York Times on New Year's Day. Terry Hecker, thank you very much for being with us.
My pleasure.
What a story. I read this and my head just spun around. You've really made a round trip on the issue of home and work and being a woman and wife and mother. Give us a sense of that round trip, where it began and where you find yourself now.
I think my round trip was the same as many women in my generation. I think when the history of the world is written, it will say that women's lives changed forever in the second half of the 20th century. It just happened they changed on my watch. So I think it was a very difficult time to be a woman. Things would be easier down the line. But I went through what a lot of women went through. And if you could see the number of letters and emails I've gotten, over 200 emails so far, all from women in my circumstance, all of them almost the same story. Didn't see it coming. Floored. Devastated.
What happened on your 40th anniversary, just so we understand the story?
Actually, my husband had left 2 years earlier. The papers came on my 40th anniversary by some cosmic design.
Yes, or maldesign.
Or what? Whatever.
You had spent a lifetime raising five kids. You have six grandchildren. You had written very publicly.
I have 12 now.
12. On they come. And you'd written about the satisfactions of that back at a time when many women were going the other way. Take us back to the 1970s and how you saw the world when you first came on the scene, became a kind of a national spokeswoman for stay-at-home momdom.
That's all I wanted to say was it's a valid choice. It wasn't that you were too stupid or too lazy to do anything else. It was a valid choice for any intelligent woman. If her husband bought into that and was willing to support the family, it was the way my mother had lived and her mother and all the mothers before me. So I just didn't like being put down. I mean, when I would go to a party and somebody would ask me what I did and I said I stayed home with my children, they would talk to me very slowly and a little louder than necessary, like I was some kind of a handicapped child.
Because you didn't have a career, because you hadn't joined that parade.
Yeah, I mean, I had five children, this huge house, and everybody asked me when I was going to work.
And then decades later, you describe being at a baby shower for a niece and overhearing the expectant mother being asked if she intended to go back to work after her baby was born. And her answer, you say, which rocked you, was, "Yes, because I don't want to end up like Aunt Terry." That's you.
That was me. I went from being, you know, kind of the family matriarch to being the poor relation.
What was it like losing that marriage?
It was devastating. It's just, you see, it's the ultimate betrayal. You know, you can only be betrayed by somebody you trusted, like Linda Tripp. You know, you can't be betrayed by your grocer. So the absolute ultimate uber betrayal is the one person that you've counted on and trusted all those years and actually put your life and your children's life in his hands.
We should read something from us from the essay that you wrote for the Times, Terry Hecker. You give us a kind of sense of the arc of life and where it brought you. Could you share some of that with us?
Of course, I'd be happy to. We'd been married by a bishop with a blessing from the Pope in a country church filled with honeysuckle and hope. 5 children and 6 grandchildren later, we were divorced by a third-rate judge in a suburban courthouse reeking of dust and despair. Our long marriage had its full share of love, complications, illnesses, joy, and stress. Near the end, we were in a dismal period with my husband in treatment for alcoholism. And although I had made more than my share of mistakes, I never expected to be served with divorce papers. I was stunned to find myself at this stage of life marooned, and it was small comfort that I wasn't alone. There were many other confused women of my age and circumstance who'd been married just as long, sharing my situation. I was in my teens when I first read Dickens' Great Expectations with the tale of Miss Havisham, who stood up by her groom-to-be, spent decades in her yellowing wedding dress, sitting in a cobweb-covered banquet table, consumed with plotting revenge. It was a great movie. I felt then that to be left waiting at the altar with a church full of people must be the most crushing thing that could happen to a woman. I was wrong. No jilted bride could feel as embarrassed and humiliated as a woman in her 60s discarded by her husband. I was confused and scared, and the pain of being tossed aside by the love of my life made bitterness unavoidable. In those first few bewildering months, I made Miss Havisham look like a good sport. Sitting around my kitchen with 2 friends who'd also been dumped by their husbands, I figured out that among the 3 of us, we'd been married 110 years. We'd been faithful wives, good mothers, cooks, and housekeepers who'd married in the 50s when dress for success meant a wedding gown, and wife had been a tenured position. It turned out we had a lot in common with our outdated kitchen appliances. Like them, we were serviceable, low-maintenance, front-loading, and self-cleaning, and relatively fuss-free. Also like that, we had warranties that had run out. Our husbands sought sleeker models with features we lacked, who could either execute tasks we'd never learned or couldn't perform without laughing.
Terry Martin Hecker reading from her essay that ran in the New York Times on New Year's Day, about 25 years after she wrote, with just the opposite message. We want to get to the lesson you're taking away from all this, Terry Hecker, but we kind of need to understand the facts first. You say it was humiliating, but it was also just logistically brutal, being divorced after 40 years of marriage in your 60s. Give us a sense of what that was like.
Well, I was totally alone. And, you know, when men divorce you, they take it with them. I mean, I'd had nothing. My credit cards were canceled. My health insurance was canceled. The income that the judge allotted me was nothing like it was. Exactly what I had been given to for household expenses through the years. And now I had to use that money to pay the mortgage, the taxes, the insurance, the car payment. So I was destitute. And finally, I told the story in the article, which is absolutely true. I had a bad leak in my roof, and I had to sell my engagement ring to pay for the roofer.
Well, your ex-husband was jetting off to Cancun with his girlfriend.
Oh, yeah.
You became eligible for food stamps on the amount of income you had.
Right, I was. The first time in my really adult life I had filed a single tax return,
right.
A notice came back with it that I was eligible for food stamps.
How did you pull it together? I guess this is the moment at which you were thinking, why don't I have a career? I could use
well,
one.
No, I was very, very lucky, Tom. Right, I had done a lot of volunteer work in my community. Which, in retrospect, I should have gone back to school and gotten some kind of degree. But
so you could have had 2 PhDs for the time you put into volunteer work.
Exactly. But I didn't. But part of the volunteer work had led to me being appointed to a vacancy on our little village board. My little village, Nyack, is 1 square mile.
Yeah.
Right as my husband left, the mayor told me that he had a terminal illness and would I please take his place. So I went into the mayor's office. And that's really, for $8,000 a year, it's a full-time job. And I think that saved my life, saved my sanity anyway.
Kept you together psychologically.
I had no place to go every day.
Right. And the $8,000 didn't hurt.
The $8,000 didn't hurt is right.
Well, wow, what a picture. When you now listen to the debate, Terry Hecker, about younger women who are said to be staying out of the workforce, at least those who can. Of course, many cannot, just financially. But some of the best-educated young women, we're told, staying out of the workforce, saying kind of what you said all those years ago, that I want to be a stay-at-home mom, put family first. What goes through your mind now?
I think it's unrealistic given our times. When I was married, nobody got divorced. I never knew anyone. No one in my family had ever been divorced. But now you've got a 50-50 chance of making it. So just on that score alone, you've got to be a little wary. And I have four sons. I only have one daughter. My daughter has three small children, and she's vice president of a Fortune 500 company.
Do you feel strange being held up as the counter stay-at-home example now after you had carried that flag those years ago?
That's strange, but it's strange that people have put me in a position that they think I belong in. When I first wrote that op-ed piece all those years ago, so many people thought that I was like a Maribel Morgan, you know, meet your husband dressed in saran wrap, and which is
when he comes through
thing.
The door, have the drink, and then kick up your heel. Yeah,
that's right. Kick up more than your heels, actually. But that certainly wasn't the case, and I certainly was pro-choice, even though I had a big family myself. That was my choice. I thought every woman should have her choice. Mm. So I was asked to speak, you know, at rallies for Right to Life, the family values people.
Yes.
Although I didn't share their particular values. Then after this came, this actually wasn't an op-ed piece. It was in the style
section. An essay, right.
I love being in the style section.
Yeah, it was great. Well, hold the thought about what happened after Terry Hecker.
Hecker,
we have to take a short break here. We're talking about women, work, and home and the long-term consequences of choices. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about women, work, and home and the long-term consequences of choices made. We're talking with Terry Martin Hecker. She celebrated the stay-at-home life when she was a young mother and was handed divorce papers on her 40th anniversary. It was, she says, devastating. There's a lesson in here. We're sorting out exactly what it is. You can join us. What do you think? Will young women opting out of the workforce today regret that choice when the kids are gone? With divorce rates what they are, is a career now a woman's best friend? What do you hear in the story of Terry Hecker? Does it sound familiar? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-8255. Talk, Terry, you were saying you were surprised by what's been made of your latest public statement here. How so?
I was contacted by a national feminist group. Would I be willing to debate Maureen Dowd? Now, I'm not the smartest woman in the world, but I would never debate Maureen Dowd.
Maureen Dowd has recently written Are Men Necessary? Yeah, yeah.
And frankly, I loved her book. Yeah. I think her book is a companion piece to the one I would write. Because hers is just what the feminist revolution has done with the unintended consequences of the feminist and sexual revolution has not made life easier for a lot of women.
You say it was brutal, it was humiliating, it brought so much of your world crashing down, and yet, and you always surprised her here, because you say, you write, if I had it to do over again, I'd still marry the man I married, that is the one who left
you. He was adorable.
And have my children. So what would you, why would you still do that? And how do you do that and have a career?
I would not have had a career, but I had a bachelor's degree. I could have gone back and taken some courses and probably then been able to teach a writing course or teach English in a local college. I would have had something, some skill. I could have gotten a real estate license. There were things I could have done in those years. But frankly, there were many mitigating circumstances that kept me at home. Besides my own children.
So what is your message to young women today who, let's say, like you, have that college degree, have a choice? Are you saying go out and get a career, be ready to launch one later, stay home with the kids? What's the Terry Hecker bottom line?
I wish I had an answer. I have 8 granddaughters. I would urge them to get a really good education and then to keep their finger in the pie. It's not enough to have a teaching degree and not work for 20 years. You've got to. You couldn't go back and pick it up again. So some kind of ongoing education. But I think we also have to make it a lot easier for mothers to go out to work. Mm. We really have to look at better daycare situations. The other thing, I would hope that the courts start recognizing the contribution a woman makes who does stay at home and allows her husband to have a career he couldn't have if he had to be home every night at 5:30 to feed the kids while she went off to some job.
And yet, that better daycare, that different attitude towards women who have stayed at home, we've been talking about those things for decades, and women still find themselves caught on the horns of exactly that dilemma. Terry Hecker, about 4.7 million people want to talk with you. I want to begin to turn to them. Therese is calling from Lansing, Michigan. Hi, Therese, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure, what do you know, Therese?
My life mirrors Terry's very much, and I just want to say that I, too, loved being home with my children. It was my first choice, and I don't regret a minute of it. I think, though, I'm paying for it now. I am really paying for it.
What happened? What's happened?
My kids were 2, 8, and 12. My husband also had a young mistress. We divorced by my choice. I just could not live with a lot of the things that were going on.
Yeah.
We remained friends, but he went off and had a really nice paying job. I had no education, and I was completely at ground zero financially.
What about alimony and child support and so on?
There was child support, and that's not enough. I immediately enrolled in college. I took in other children and had a home daycare. I did that for a number of years, getting my initial courses at night, being with my kids. During the day, I mowed lawns, I answered the phones at a church, local church.
And what's your future look like now, Therese?
My future is that I'll be working a really, really long time because you go to ground zero unless you have a lot of money in the bank and you have no education.
So what would you do differently?
I wouldn't do anything differently. I think our society's got to wake up. All the kids that are being put into daycare at 6 weeks old and being mothered by other people, I think it's having a negative effect. And I have to say I have two daughters, and they're educated, and I'm glad that they are. But I'm sad that my grandchildren have been in daycare when I wish that they weren't.
Wow.
I have to say my oldest daughter and her husband work opposite shifts in order to make that as minimal as possible. And, I don't think it's terrible for people to put their kids in daycare. I just think it's sad.
Yeah,
I think it's sad.
The dilemma is so acute, it hurts here. Terry Hecker, Therese is calling from Lansing, and she got hit by a very similar dynamic, but a lot earlier than you did. She, too, says she wouldn't change a thing. She wants society to change, but it's not exactly changing.
No, it isn't. And if you could see these letters that I've gotten, there's some of them would break your heart. I mean, women whose husbands left, they had minimal incomes. The child support's never enough to maintain the lifestyle you had before. Usually there's no alimony. That seems to be gone. And then I've had a couple of women who wrote to me and said their husbands and then quickly remarried some achieving lady and now are suing for custody of their children because they can give them a better home.
Ouch. It hurts on many sides. Therese, thanks for your call. I want to turn, Terry Hecker, if I may, to Washington and Heidi Hartman. She is an economist and president of the Institute for Women's Policy Research. It's a nonprofit think tank. They work on women's issues there. Heidi Hartman, thank you very much for being with us.
It's a pleasure to join you.
I'm sure you have caught up with Terry Martin Hecker's story. How common a story is this? Do we see a pattern of, I don't know, with high divorce rates, are women, especially women, older women, being caught out? Are they being left in real trouble by sort of the way society is evolving?
Well, certainly that is happening. I mean, interestingly, one of the things the data shows is that the longer your marriage lasts, the lower your probability of getting divorced. And if you didn't work outside the home, that also lowers your probability. But unfortunately, it's a large population, and there are too many women that have the same story that Terry has. Right now, there are about 12.5 million women in America who are currently divorced. And when those women are over age 65, they have the highest poverty rate of any women who are over age 65, which is 22%. So clearly, divorce is leaving these women more poor even than widowhood would.
So as an economist, what lesson do you take away from this? Does it mean no woman can afford to be at home without a career ready at her trigger finger? Is that possible?
Well, it is possible, and I do think that is what most young women are choosing. I mean, we hear a lot about the increase of young women staying home with children, but actually that's not reflected in the data. Women have been dropping out of the labor force because of the recent recession, and the economy is recovering, but employment isn't recovering. Men are dropping out, too. There isn't any evidence that mothers are dropping out in this, you know, period more than other women. Women do drop out a little bit more than men, but it's not clear that mothers are making a new choice to stay home. That's not happening. But some mothers will choose to stay home, and as one of your callers has said, you know, she feels that's preferable. Most women, most young women, are making a decision to get that education and training for a career, to take a few years off, and then essentially, you know, to go back as soon as they comfortably can. And many women, like myself, you know, we never took any real time off. I have three children, but never was out of the labor force more than, you know, the maternity leave period. But I'm not that young. I'm 60. So,
Terry Hecker, there are the numbers. If you end up in the particular pothole that you ran over, it's pretty darn tough. And society's not going to change in an instant to support you.
Well, one of the interesting things in the government has not done or has done, Social Security, for whatever reason, is a little ahead of this curve. I got my husband's Social Security even though we were divorced, because that had been written into the Social Security law some time back that if you're married more than 10 years. So that piece of the government, I think, was very timely and appropriate. The courts, from all of these letters and from what – I mean, I face court. My husband was a judge in our community. He was a lawyer there for all those years, so I certainly didn't get a fair hearing. But most of the women who wrote to me also said they didn't get a fair hearing, that whatever they contributed to the marriage was considered worthless when it came time to figure out what percentage of the assets of that marriage came to her. And that's something I think should be looked at very carefully.
So, Heidi Hartman, as an economist, what's your recommendation to young women looking at a lifetime of maybe child rearing, maybe career? What's the wise economist way to put these things together these days?
Well, I would say, you know, prepare for that career and exercise that career. Work as much as you can at the same time ensuring your children are well raised. I think it means pressing your husband to take on the family and child rearing responsibilities too. If you're working and he's working, shouldn't always be you that takes the kids to the doctor. You both would have to make an equal, you know, commitment to your career and make sure that he sacrifices some of his career for the family work as well. Following what Terry said, a very important piece of advice to young women who are married, who are contemplating divorce: if there is a way to stretch your legal marriage to 10 years, do it, because you'll never know at the time you retire whether it will turn out for you to be better off getting Social Security based on his record rather than your own. So if you're at the 7, 8, 9 year mark and you can delay the legal divorce till 10 years, do that. That's very important for young women to know. Investing in yourself and your career, that is what young women are doing. They are getting married. They are having children. I hope women will continue to have children. I think we all want that. In the reality of, I mean, the U.S. has a higher divorce rate, twice as high as almost any other advanced country. We have a slightly higher marriage rate, too. Many countries have more cohabiting couples. But given our high divorce rate, the reality is you have to prepare for that as a young woman, that that might happen to you.
We're talking long-term, lifetime strategy here. Heidi Hartman at the Institute for Women's Policy Research in Washington, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Terry Hecker, stand by. I want to welcome into our conversation Ellen Goodman, syndicated columnist.
My hero.
Yeah, well, she's with us from the Boston Globe. She's written about your essay, put it really in a national spotlight, brought it to the fore. Ellen Goodman, it's wonderful to have you. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Tom.
You call Terry Hecker's essay a sadder but wiser memo, a cautionary tale. What did you read in this wonderful couple of pages, Ellen?
Well, I read just what Terry said, which was that she had played according to a certain rule book. The rules changed in the middle, and she was reminding young women who may not remember or think about the rules changing on them that they can.
So, what's the back from the future memo here to the what we're told, and it's confusing, but we're told that there's a wave or wavelet of younger women choosing to stay home. What's the message, Ellen?
Well, the wave is, as Heidi said, very much in dispute.
Yes.
The New York Times does run these stories every 6 months or so saying how elite women are opting out. And if you go back over the history of those stories, you'll find some very dubious opting out.
Duly noted.
There was a wonderful piece in Slate interviewing a woman who 25 years ago was the subject of one of these pieces. She'd never opted out, and she was like Terry's daughter at some major company.
Doing just fine, thank you.
All right. But there is, you know, there's always conversation and fascination with elite women, that small group of women who have all the economic choices that you can imagine, taking the choice to be at home with their children. And maybe they think it's going to be forever, but it's only for 3 years before they move back into the workforce. Or maybe they think it's going to be forever, and then their husbands die, divorce them, you know, end up like the CEO of some major corporation in jail. Who knows?
Right.
But their life is full of twists and turns. And I think the message of the last quarter century is that women have to be able to take care of themselves,
Ellen,
and
we,
their children.
We've been talking about women in this equation, but what about men? Is there something in this whole ball of wax, feminism, the sexual revolution, new social structures here, are men more free to walk out the door, to leave a woman, perhaps in really tough circumstances?
Well, maybe, but I think there's another side to that, too, which is that young people get married on a much more egalitarian basis. And then if, in fact, the woman wants to stay home, unexpectedly often decides to stay at home with children or needs to for one of a variety of reasons, that man may suddenly find himself in the position of being the sole support of his family and maybe in a dicey economy. And maybe the egalitarian relationship that they both imagined turns into a traditional one that they thought was their parents'.
Mm-hmm.
Script, but not their own.
Terry Hecker, Ellen Goodman saw your essay in a minute and lifted it right on further up, even from the prominence it had in the Times. She calls your story a cautionary tale. Is that the way you would describe it at this point?
I called it a cautionary tale, actually.
Well, then you both do. I mean, you're it's a perfect
comedy.
I mean, I know you did. I'm such a fan. I'm thrilled to be here with you.
And sadder but wiser memo? I mean, I guess there's no way that we can see it as other than that.
I think there are a couple of things that factor into this. Right now, there are more women in college than men. There are many more women of color in college than men of color. So there are all kinds of problems that come out of those of that statistic. The other thing that I found, Ellen, in my family and what I see around me, the women are getting married much later. I got married at 23. Nobody in my family now, none of the young women, are getting married much before their mid-30s. My daughter was in her late 30s. And by that time, they have careers. I gave up a very marginal job to get married. That's another piece of it. They have to give up careers if they want to stay home, that they've taken years to get to that place, to get to that position in their company. And they're really not willing to do it. And I think they're right. Because if they give it up, no matter what, they're not going to come back at that level 10 or 15 years later.
I think one of the things that has happened, too, is that younger women do get married later. They have children later, particularly college-educated ones. But they often face the same lack of choices. And one of the things that my generation thought we would solve and did not solve was this the work-family bind. And it isn't solved. And the younger generation is told, look what you can do. You can choose anything. You can stay at home with your children. You can go work. Mm-hmm. And the flip side of that is that you make that choice all by yourself, and society doesn't have to change at all in order to accommodate it, in order to make it work better for ourselves and children. And so in all of this time, work has not bent to the arc of life or love. And a younger generation is even more individualistic than my own was, which went through the collective experience of the women's movement.
And ending up with whatever they end up with at the other end of that arc, Ellen Goodwin's column was Desperate Ex-Housewives. Ellen, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you, Tom.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back with Terry Hecker.
Support for On Point comes from the listeners of WBUR Boston. Bicon Dental Implants, offering short implants that can eliminate the need for bone grafting. Information is available at Bicon.com, B-I-C-O-N.com. And Private Wealth Management at Babson Capital. For more than 60 years, helping clients build and preserve wealth through financial planning, investment management, and trust services. In Cambridge and on the web at BabsonCapital.com.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking about women, work, and home, the long-term consequences of choices made these days, and a couple decades ago. My guest is Terry Martin Hecker. She celebrated the stay-at-home life when she was young and was handed divorce papers on her 40th anniversary. You can join the conversation. What do you hear in this story of a stay-at-home mom of five dumped at age 63? Do young women opting out today have stars in their eyes about the future and future vulnerability? Stay-at-home moms, does this story turn your head, make you think twice? And career moms, does this story make it sound worth the hard slog? We're at 1-800-423-8255. William is calling from Columbia, South Carolina. Hi, William, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Good to have you.
Yeah, listen, I would like to change the, maybe we can have a gestalt shift here and sort of change the paradigm. I think Terry probably is a hero to her children and her grandchildren, and should be. She probably has humanized and socialized those children and grandchildren in a way that will benefit us all. I just wonder what would have happened to her children and her grandchildren had she gone off and worked somewhere and gotten a high-powered job and seen her children here and there and put them in daycare, gotten them a nanny. I just think they would have been totally different people.
Terry Hecker, jump in here with us on William's gestalt gear shift. Was it worth it? Was it worth exactly what you went through for what it let you give your children?
William's brilliant. Thank you, William. Of course. I mean, my children are all, my youngest is 36, my oldest is 49, so 48. They turned out great. They are really lovely human beings. They're kind and generous and thoughtful and funny. And I'm not sure they would have turned out that well if both my husband and I, because he was a wonderful father, hadn't given them the kind of attention and care that we were able to do.
But can you hear younger women just twisting in the wind when you say that? Because on the one hand, you're warning, don't end up like I ended up. On the other hand, you're saying, stay home with the kids. And what are people supposed to do?
I think you've got to compromise. I mean, my daughter's a great mother, but she's exhausted.
And William, do you think people can have it both ways? What about the downside of this equation? What about Terry's, finding herself in this brutal situation at 63?
I think we need to separate the two, though. I think you need to understand that what she has done for her children up to, let's say, she is 60, has produced some wonderful people.
But it's easy to separate the two if you're not walking in her shoes.
I understand, but now she has a problem, which may be part of her situation with her husband, who sounds like he may be a cad, and that's unfortunate. But what she has done has been a wonderful thing for her children and given us, society, wonderful people who can operate well within our society.
So is the lesson, in your view, for younger women listening to this story, William, who don't want to end up dumped in the end?
I think Terry probably, I would think, would be an exception and not a rule. It's unfortunate that it happened to her.
But we've got a high divorce rate in this country.
I understand that, but I think when you get to be in near 60, I think the divorce rate does not jump up. It probably stabilizes. I would imagine it's something far less than what is considered the norm for the country. But I think she ought to be proud of what she has done. I would think that we as a society ought to find ways to help her in her situation. And if the courts are not giving her extra garnishment from her husband's salary, then there's something wrong there.
William, thank you very much for your call. Terry, I wonder, William wants to put a badge of honor on you here, and we understand that, and we hear you responding to it, and yet you can imagine younger women listening to your story trying to factor into their own life decisions. It's not easy to wrestle together the kind of parenting you can do at home and the kind of career that your story suggests one might want to keep together.
It's a terribly hard balancing act. Just marriage is a balancing act. When I got married in the mid-50s, marriage through the ages had been based on mutual dependency. And there was nothing, the only thing we negotiated was if I go to your mother's for Christmas, you're going to have to come to mine for Thanksgiving. That was it. Now couples are getting married, and what they bring to the marriage is self-sufficiency. And everything has to be negotiated. Separate bank accounts, do I keep your name? I mean, it's so much more complicated now and difficult.
Does that mean that we've still got the proto-pre-feminist yearning in you for the old days when it was simple, when he went to work and you were at home, but the only difference you'd write in is, please don't, let's not get divorced at 63?
No, I think the only thing that was easier for me was that I went into a situation that my mother had been in, my grandmother. I thought I knew what I was getting into.
Yeah.
As most of the women who've been writing to me have said, they knew what they were getting into. But halfway through, we barely got married and had children, and all the rules changed. You know, the goalposts were moved. The playbook was changed. All of the rules got adjusted. And I've always said if our generation of children are called Generation X, then we mothers who were brought them up in that time are Generation Y, us. Why did everything change on our watch? It was a very, very difficult time to be a woman. Now it's a completely different ballgame. The women today have choices and opportunities and problems we never thought of.
Emmy's calling from Cambridge, Massachusetts. Hi, Emmy. You're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call.
Good to have you.
I wanted to say that I just finished law school, and I also actually just got engaged.
Okay.
And so I'm at this point where I'm considering both, you know, a career, starting a career, and also starting a family. And I'm also the, you know, daughter of a divorced woman. And so she got divorced when I was 5, and so we essentially went through the divorce together.
Right.
And so I went through economic hardship as much as she did. And so, you know, I was working right before law school, and I had this 401k, and, you know, my financial planner was like, oh, no, you're putting this money in account because women today just can't trust, you know, their husbands or, you know, the whole marriage thing. And so that was really weird. So now I'm out of school, and I'm thinking, do I think about my individual happiness or the collective happiness of my family? You know, do I think about having an office at home, or do, you know, and with the kids in one room and the fax machine in another room, or do I think about going to a firm and, like, you know, making sure that I'm putting in the 60 hours a week and then,
right,
you know, going to check in on the kids at 9 o'clock at night to at least give them a kiss.
You've got all the threads of this conversation right in your hand, your own family, mother's divorce behind you, and now engagement and law school. Well, what's your impulse from everything you're hearing? Where do you think you're headed?
My impulse is to take option C, and it's to you know, essentially refrain from the working world, which isn't providing me, you know, fair options. I don't like the fact that I would have to put my child in to daycare at 6 weeks. That is unfair. And I think, you know, Terry did a great job in raising her children. And I think that that's really important to recognize. As much as it's important to recognize that I want to, you know, that we should all be contributing people in the economic economy.
So is option C, Emmy, the home office or forget about work? How do you define it?
The option C is the home office and basically forging your being your own employer so that you can also take part in your children's lives as well.
Now that means you're not going to be the partner at the firm, at least not for the first 20 years here or so. Is that all right with you in terms of women standing in society?
I think that that's my way of merging the collective and the individual happiness, the collective happiness of my family as well as my own individual ambitious pursuits.
Terry Hecker, you can hear how finely and wisely Emmy seems to be trying to cut this. What do you think?
Oh, I think she's got it. She's a very smart girl. I recently had to take one of my grandchildren to a dentist, and it was a woman dentist, and she had the office in her home. And I thought, this is a great profession for a woman, because she can have her office right in her home. Her children are there. They're regular hours. For the most part, you don't get called out in the middle of the night. And the woman has a really wonderful profession that she can keep on going. That's the kind of thing that a lot of women are going to have to look at.
But if that means that women are always kind of in the margins of the economy and the power that comes with it, what about the vision, Terry Hecker, out there when you wrote in 1977 of women in the workplace picking up a kind of equality of power, even financial clout, that they had not had before?
I'm not sure I'm following.
Well, if people are working in home offices and kind of on the side, that may be great for them individually. But what about for women and their power, their place in society overall? Does the women's movement...
I think every young woman has to make her own decisions, her own choices, and then with her spouse or mate, figure out how they're going to live their lives. Because if he's expecting that she's going to be this, wonderful surgeon and make all this money, and that means he should probably never be around with their children, then that's an expectation that she has to deal with. Their expectations, in other words, have to meld.
Yeah, at many, many levels here. Emmy, good luck to you, and thanks for your call. Arjuna is calling from Newton, Massachusetts. Arjuna, hi, you're on the air.
I am fine, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Good to have you.
It seems all your callers have kind of put my life out there. My mother was a homemaker,
yes.
But she didn't have the skill set to go out and work. So she wanted to make sure that me and my sister get good education and can support the family when there is a need.
And your own life, Archana, how's it working out then?
I'm a lawyer. I worked here in this country for 11 years and saw that I was discriminated badly everywhere.
Because of your motherhood or why?
Because not only because of my motherhood, because of my ethnicity, I'm from India.
Okay.
And so I said that, okay, the workforce is not making me happy. Why don't I stay home? It was very difficult initially. But at the end of the day, I know that whatever I'm doing with my kids is I'm putting best effort. And at the end of the day, I can't say I wish I was home and could have done this differently. Whatever is the outcome, I am responsible for it.
So have you surrendered your law career, Arjuna, or are you still keeping it up? Are you going to go back to it?
I am not going back to the law career, but I kept myself busy with a lot of volunteer work with women organizations. And I'm also planning to enroll in a mid-career program at Kennedy School of Government so that I can keep my intellectual side alive.
And if it came to it, if it was necessary, do you think you could support yourself? Could you revive the law career or turn to a new one midlife?
I think I can. I think what I have learned is that everybody has a survival instinct, and you have to just work towards it. It may not be that I will live in a very, posh neighborhood or a very wealthy lifestyle, but I don't see myself going back to a level of poverty where I can't support myself because I got education.
Well, you've got that law degree in your back pocket, but doing the same balancing act, your version of it, that we're hearing on all fronts today. Arjuna, thanks very much for your call. Let's take another. Nancy's calling from Worcester, Massachusetts. Hi, Nancy. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. What do you think?
Well, I'm a 36-year-old working mother. Having grown up really on the backs of people like Terry and my divorced mother, I heeded their caution and went and got I'm an Ivy-educated MBA.
Okay.
And now we're in the position that I'm the primary earner for my family, and it's still really posited as an all-or-nothing situation for women where we're either leaving the workforce, my elite colleagues from my school are leaving the workforce, but the corporate America, although they're doing some things, I've been fortunate to be able to telecommute
right
my job full time for the last 3 years.
And do you have kids, Nancy?
I have one and one on the way.
Okay, we got it.
Although corporate America has done a few things like telecommute or throw us a bone for 6 weeks maternity leave, there still is not enough done. There's not enough ability to work part-time. My husband and I would love it if I could work 30 hours a week. There's not enough re-entry ramps back into the workforce for my colleagues who are choosing to leave.
So what's your expectation, Nancy? Are you planning to power through, stay working right through your child-raising years?
Well, yeah, it's interesting. My husband actually is a strong advocate that I always be able to earn an income, a significant income. You know, just again, as a cautionary tale, he's also the child of divorce, and we both have learned that lesson. But it's not without its difficulty. I would love to have more time with my child, with my children. But, you know, given the choice of all or nothing, I'm going to have to say all because, you know, again, I need to heed the caution, but also we need the income.
It's a big load to carry, but we can hear you doing it. We wish you luck with it. Nancy, I want to try and get one more call here. Thank you very much for being with us. Patty is calling from Sudbury. Hi, Patty, you're on the air.
Hi. Just very quickly, the thing that I find really disturbing here is that it seems that women, the focus right now is on women have to be able to do it all because we're at the mercy of men who, or some men who clearly find that it's okay to be married and have children with a woman and dump them when they are in their 60s for some women maybe 20 or 30 years younger.
Yeah.
Why is that okay? I mean, clearly it's not okay. But where's the focus on raising boys to understand that when they go into a marriage and into a family situation, that is a mutual thing? That's not something that just the women are supposed to do.
Patty, we've got it. Our time is short. Terry Hecker, what about the man's part in all this? That is not okay, our caller Patty says.
No, it isn't. But there are all kinds of sociologists, anthropologists who have zeroed on this and said something about the sexual and the female revolution have somehow allowed men to walk away from marriages. If my father had left my mother with her six children, no one would have spoken to him again. Not his family, not her family, not any of their friends. That doesn't happen now. It's accepted. And sometimes even admired, which blows my mind. So I think that's a big problem. And the other thing, I just want to get back to the last caller, because one of the things that I think she zeroed in on corporate America. My own daughter, who's with the Fox Network, which is News Corp, they did allow her to work a 3-day week after she had her third baby, and a 4-day week. They accommodated her schedule because she was valuable to them, and they didn't want to lose her, and she didn't want to. She couldn't possibly have ever walked away from that job, among other things. She loves her job, but I think corporate America has to look at that. I mean, on-site daycare is a big bonus, and a 3-day week or a splitting a job with another person seems to be a very good alternative. Women working full-time, a 40-plus hour week, and also raising children, I don't know how they do it.
Terry Hecker, we're very grateful to you for going public again with your story. That can't have necessarily been easy, but you write it so beautifully, and you've really done us all a favor by bringing it all to light with such richness. Thank you. Are you going to write more? Are you going to make a book out of this one, Terry?
I am. Actually, I had written a book a year ago, and every publisher in New York turned it down because they said that it was beautifully written, but there was no interest in this subject.
We think
so
they're
now
wrong.
I think we put that to rest.
Thank you very much. Terry Martin Hecker, thank you very much for being with us this hour. Thanks for joining us, and good luck.
Thank you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR, National Public Radio.